97.5, The Fanatic.
But joining me now on a Comcast Business Hotline bounce forward is a guy who covers the Eagles long time for the Allentown Morning Call, my buddy Nick Fierro. And Nick, what's up, man?
How you doing? Yeah, it's been a long time.
It has been, and it's been obviously a busy offseason for the Eagles. But before we get to all that stuff, you texted me something that blew my mind, and you called it the greatest athletic feat you ever saw as I started talking about Veterans Stadium and our memories. So I teased it a little bit with everybody out there. Tell everyone what was the greatest athletic feat you ever saw, because you witnessed it at the Old Vet.
Okay, so I'm sure a lot of people have guessed it already or were there for it. It was the Carl Wallenda walk across the stadium, right across the top of the stadium on a tightrope, between games of a doubleheader. That's back in the days when they used to actually schedule doubleheaders. So it was a great bargain there. my father and I used to go to games all the time. That was a deal. But here's what stood out. I mean, it's one thing to go across the stadium on a tightrope with no net underneath. But a couple of things really stood out to me, which I didn't know at the time. But A, his age. I think he was pushing 70 at the time. He was, I think, about 67.
Wow.
And, this was in 1972, and he would die 6 years later at age 73, I believe. So, yeah, he was closer to 70 than he was to 60, that's for sure. And then halfway through, I mean, he's right in the middle. It looks like all of a sudden he's having some trouble. He goes down to his knees, like, uh-oh, you know, and he's wobbling a little bit. And all I kept thinking at the time was, man, you know, not only would how bad it would be if he fell for him, but how bad it would be for everybody else. I mean, how you know, just all the stuff that would happen if he fell. They obviously couldn't play the next game. There would be all kinds of just a horrible sight for children there. And it would just be a really tough thing to look at. But yet everybody would be looking at it. But here it turns out, and he actually was in a little bit of trouble, but while he was down there, he just figures, it turns out that he felt that the wire wasn't strung tightly enough across the stadium, and that can make things hazardous for a tightrope walker. Found this out after the fact. But while he was down there, he just decides, well, I'm just going to do a headstand, hold it there for about 10 seconds or so.
Incredible, Nick.
He does a headstand, gets back, and then just resumes his walk all the way across calmly, all the way across. Unbelievable. And I got to think, you know, I've been around 60 years now. I got to think that's about the most incredible thing I've ever seen in person or on TV. I mean,
it's life or death. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is. And he was 67 years old.
I'm looking at pictures now, and yeah, he's got like, he's balding up top. He certainly looks right there in the 60 age range. I can't imagine that they would ever do anything like this again anymore now with
I mean, even the kite man thing that they did with the guy, because he wiped out a little bit. You know, imagine Melinda had he like fallen in an area where, you know, fans were below. And
yeah.
That will never happen again. I don't care how many insurance liabilities you sign.
Right. I don't even know. Like, how does a guy find out that he's good at walking a tightrope? Like, where do you develop that skill? You go, wow, I can do this. I do it so well. And now I'm going to walk across a stadium. The pictures of this, it's insane.
It's the family. He was born into it.
Okay.
And the Wallenda family, they were, flying trapeze artists. They did all kinds of stuff involving balance and high wire acts, literally. And I don't know if he was the first. I think it was his father might have started it. But it's a whole family. It's still going strong, by the way. But
he didn't die doing it.
Because lots of Wallendas have died. I think something's like over 20 Wallendas have died.
Doing various stunts?
Yes.
Oh, wow. But how about...
It's eventually going to get you. I mean, it's kind of like being in the mafia. You know, you can live a high life for a long time, but eventually you're going to get whacked. And that's almost kind of... That's like being in that life. And, you know, I remember when he did fall and he died, it was, I think it was in Mexico. He was 73. But his family claimed that it was because the wire wasn't, you know, very good. It was too loose. And it was windy. And he went down, or else it never would have happened. But still, I mean, when you do things like that, it's really kind of crazy. And again, the age, that's what kind of stuck out. And I remember the players, too, were coming out you know, lots of times between a doubleheader of your players.
Right, yeah.
You know, but back then, they weren't interested in coming out and doing, they're trying to go back and sleep in the training room, whatever, you know. And the only player I ever remember that liked playing doubleheaders was Ernie Banks.
Yeah, let's play two. So, yeah.
And, you know, they're coming out, they're watching this, it's incredible. Some of them are clapping. It was really just an amazing scene. And, yeah, I'm like, how did he pull this off? And how did the Phillies pull this off? It really would have been a awful had he fallen. Just the worst thing ever.
I just watched it. I'm watching him fall. You can Google that and see the one. Oh, it's horrible. The one, it was in 1978, yeah. And there's a YouTube video of ABC News where he stumbled, and then that was it. He was gone. He fell off that. That is hard, but that is an incredible, incredible feat. Now, obviously, Vet Stadium 50 years ago today, it opened. You've had other memories there. What else sticks out in your mind, Nick? Because you covered I'm sure, a bunch of games also there as well later in your career.
Yeah, I did earlier in your career. Earlier in my career, it was mostly toward the end of the Veterans Stadium run. For the most part, I was a fan for most of that. But I was there for a lot of big time moments. Obviously the 80 Phillies World Series when they won, we were able to score. We were kind of fortunate. One of my college buddies at the time ended up being my roommate, Corey Pote, who lives in Delaware now. His father happened to be really good friends with Bill Giles, who wasn't the owner at the time, but he was pretty high up. So mm-hmm. somehow we scored, you know, field box seats at the regular price.
Face value.
$20.
Yeah. Wow.
Face value, $20. We were literally, you know, three arm lengths away from Pete Rose when he grabbed that ball that Bob Boone dropped, which kind of turned the whole thing around.
Was that game six? He did that?
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
You were there for game six.
They were there. I was there for game six when they won it all. It was the only World Series game I had ever been to at that point. And then, of course, in 08, I was covering the Phillies, but that was in the different stadium, but when they won it.
Yeah.
But there was also a time where the Phillies put together 10 runs in the first inning. I think that was against the Cubs. If I'm not mistaken, that wasn't
the Von Hayes two home runs in the first inning game, was it?
It could have been.
That was the Mets. They ended up scoring like 26 or something.
Yeah, I think this was earlier. This was before Von Hayes got there. But he also had that, and I'm not sure if I was there for that one. That was after I stopped going to games and stuff because I was beyond college age by then. I was working and stuff. And I wasn't covering the Phillies, and I was doing mostly in the 80s, I was doing pretty much all high school sports. But the game where Larry Boa was catching some, you know, Larry Boa and Pete Rose had a kind of a weird relationship, and it was they were really good friends, you know. But mm-hmm. but for a while there, you know, Boa, I remember that before this game, as it turns out. Pete Rose was kind of chiding him into batting practice. You know, you're swinging the bat like a girl. And so Larry Boa ends up hitting a grand slam right-handed, which is his better side. And then, he's like giving Pete a lot of crap going around the bases. He's just sitting there with his hands on his knees, you know, taking it. He wasn't doing anything, you know.
I never heard that story before, Nick. Next time I see Boa, I got to ask him about that. That's a great story.
He said something like, take a long ride on that one, Pete.
Oh, man. He didn't hit a whole lot of home runs, Larry Boa. He certainly didn't.
No.
That's for sure.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Well, Nick, obviously you covered it, the Eagles for the Allentown Morning Call, and everybody can follow Nick Fierro on Twitter at Nick Fierro. As the draft is coming up right now, I said earlier in the show, and I've been saying this for a while, once the Eagles traded down from 6 to 12, I just don't feel this team values playmaker, wide receiver, that highly. They certainly didn't at six, where they could have had whoever most likely that they wanted, because it probably would have been there. But I really feel like they're going to go O-line or D-line. You look at the history of this team since Keith Jackson in 88. Anytime they've picked in the top half of the draft, the 13 times it's been quarterback, O-line, or D-line. What do you think they were going to do?
Yeah, I think it points to that. But I think it probably points to defense maybe more. Mm-hmm. I still feel like they feel like, you know, they've invested a lot in their offensive line over these last couple years. And I still think that, you know, they feel some guys can play there. But if there's somebody there, I mean, they might do it. But Quiddy Pay is a guy that's been talked about. He's a defensive lineman from Michigan, a hybrid guy he would be a D end in their system. He might be a guy, especially because there's not a lot of great pass rushers in this draft, at least according to the experts. There's really not that many. And so if you have a chance to grab a guy, then you might as well, because forget about, you know, any guy that you draft in the second round or beyond is going to be a project. And, you know, they need more than projects, with premium draft picks in the first 2 days. And, you know, so maybe they do that. Maybe they go for a cornerback. But my feeling too is that, this new defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, is going to be playing probably a cover two a lot of the time. You don't do it all the time. And in that situation, you don't necessarily value great cover corners. So, you know, maybe they go in a different direction there. Maybe they actually draft a guy like Micah Parsons, who would be a great fit for them at middle linebacker. But, you know, they just don't seem like they value that position enough. You have to go back to 1970 to use a first-round pick on a 4-3 linebacker.
Yeah, they took Jerry Robinson, in 79, but they were 3-4 then? In 79?
They were 3-4, and they were 3-4 in 20. Now, how quickly we forget Marcus Smith, you know, in 2014, and he was technically a linebacker.
But
he was a pass rusher in the 3-4, but in a 4-3, when you're playing that, and your linebackers are typically not pass rushers, they haven't drafted one since Steve Zabel in 1970.
Now, I would love to see a guy like Micah Parsons. I know there's been some concerns about some of the stuff. I don't know that he'll even be there at 12. Like, there's possibility that he can go somewhere in the top 10. I've heard Detroit really likes him, too. Does the addition of Kyle Wilson this week take some of that need away in your mind? It probably does in their mind, and we know how they feel about linebackers. But what do you feel about the addition of Kyle Wilson and how that would impact it if you were making a pick?
Yeah, for me, it wouldn't, because I think they still need linebackers. I mean, they needed Kyle Wilson, and they're going to need another linebacker, I believe, to come out of this draft and be a starter for them and play at a high level. Because I don't know that they can trust the guys that they, you know, what they did last year. They drafted two linebackers last year. I'm just not sure about them. Davian Taylor, Sean Bradley. I mean, Bradley ended up being playing ahead of Taylor. Maybe there's futures for them, but they're kind of slow to develop. And, you know, I'm just not sure of them. So I don't think it would impact that at all. But maybe that's what they're thinking because of how they value the position or how they don't value the position. And so, yeah, they could end up going O-line too. I mean, my thinking is D-line or you know, some kind of a defensive position, corner. I don't know if there's any safeties out there at number 12 that would be a good pick at 12, but, you know, the safeties to me anymore are more valuable, especially if they're going to play a zone concept, than the cornerbacks.
Well, that brings me to this. I don't think they're done moving. They got 11 picks. I think there's a lot of possibilities, a lot of different things they can do. I kind of believe they'd be more inclined to trade even further back, not out of the first round, but drop into the teens. More so than trading back into the top 10. If they don't stay put at 12, what do you think is the more likely scenario? Trade back or trade up?
Yeah, I would say trade back. You know, they need draft. I mean, they have a lot. I mean, and they're sitting on possibly three first-rounders next year, depending on how Carson Wentz does. But they could always use more, especially with Howie Roseman's track record, not exactly drafting that well. And so the more you have, the better chance you have of coming out the other end of this. You know, so I might do that, especially if they feel, you know, the way the Eagles rank players, that they're in clusters. They have the same kind of grade around five or six guys. And if they feel like there's three or four or five guys that are still sitting there, you know, that are going to be still sitting there at 12, they might as well try to trade back, because they feel like they're going to get somebody just as good at 15 or 16 as they do at 12. But let me say this too.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of talk about the Eagles and Deshaun Watson, but after yesterday, after what his lawyer said yesterday, I think that hand's got to be off, right? Now that he admitted to consensual relations with some of them, I think it's hands off. I don't think I wouldn't even be dealing with that at all.
Well, I think there's such a long way away from being all of that stuff's got to be settled, and then what the NFL decides to do as far as the ramifications and punishment before you can even think about getting in the mix. And I feel like by that time, the Eagles will have a better idea on Jalen Hurts. They'll know if he could potentially be the guy or if they have to go in a different direction. So what do you think about Jalen Hurts? We only saw 4-plus games out of him. And, Nick, what I saw made me want to see more. I don't know that they know he's the answer, because obviously they've inquired about moving up. They've looked into all these other possibilities. They got an eye on Deshaun Watson. They got an eye on Russell Wilson. But in this offense with Nick Sirianni and what he's been able to do with different quarterbacks, I'm excited to see if he can pan out, and I think he deserves a full year as the guy.
Yeah, I do too, and I really like what he can do, especially in an offense where they might not put as much on him as they did the quarterbacks before. I think that I'm fairly certain they're going to run the ball more under Sirianni and Steichen and Steichen. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but it's Steichen, I guess. But I'm fairly sure, and the more you do that, and if you are successful, and I think they will be, they got some pretty good running backs in there now all of a sudden. I thought that was a good move to,
Jordan Howard.
They did the other day.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they have, obviously,
Miles Sanders.
You know, yeah. And so they might even, you know, draft another guy too. They're going to be a good team. I'm not so sure, you know, what they're going to do at tight end, but I'll say this, that, you know, even in the running game, that the Dallas Goedert's a really good blocker, a much better blocker than Zach Ertz has been. And, you know, Ertz tries. He gets the job done at times, but I think Goddard's just got more of a natural strength and ability in that area. I think they're going to be a better running team, and that's going to make Hurts, a better quarterback. You know, you're putting a lot less on him. And, of course, and he can run too. And I really like the fact that he's got all the intangibles too. You know, he's taken over this team. He's been that way, you know, pretty much from the start. He really does everything, I think, the right way. He's got that part down, kind of like Dak Prescott in Dallas. I mean, Dak Prescott's got all those intangibles too. There still might be some questions about how he can function if they don't have a great running game behind him, but, we're going to find out. I mean, they just paid him a boatload of money. I do like everything about Hurts, because he put his career back together after transferring out of Alabama, and look at the year he had, just in 1 year at Oklahoma under a little bit of a different system. And I'd like to see him come back, you know, with a full off season under his belt. And I hope they have a full off season and they don't do this virtual stuff.
Well, NFLPA is pushing for it, though, Nick. They're pushing for it. So there's going to have to be a compromise. One last one for you before I let you go. And you mentioned, obviously, Howie's draft history and the track record and the poor track record. I know a lot of people that, like, fire Howie hashtag is always trending and it's always out there. It doesn't surprise me that he has this level of job security. Does it surprise you?
Yeah, it does. But then again, the more I think about it, the further we get into this regime here, the more I think that, you know, maybe he's just doing what the owner wants.
Mm.
And if that's the case, that's why, I mean, it could very well be that. It could very well be that he's just following orders. And if that's the case, he's doing a pretty good job of it. You know, I'm guessing that too. But maybe that's why Jeffrey Lurie is kind of reluctant to get rid of him, because, you know, he's not pushing back maybe to as much as he should.
Exactly.
It's hard to say. I think that the further we go into this, the more it points toward that. And Howie, I will say this about Howie Roseman. I'm not so sure. I'm not gung-ho on firing him, because I don't think he's the worst GM in the league, but right. I don't think he's the best. I think he's kind of like right in the middle. When you factor in everything, what he does with veteran free agents, the way he's able to swing trades, you know, you got to factor all that in too, you know. And so
he won a Super Bowl 3 years ago, right?
You got to give him that. And it was a big part of it was the moves that he made with those one-year contracts, the running backs, the veterans. He had a bunch of Grand Slam home runs with veterans, either through free agency or trades.
Nick, good stuff, man. Really appreciate it. That's Nick Fierro, covers the Eagles for the Allentown Morning Call, covers the Buffalo Bills beat for SI.com. Follow him on Twitter at Nick Fierro. Appreciate it, man. Have a great night.
I do. Take care.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.